about to tune in to your number one radio station.
This is 106.1 KALA FM. I'm your host of Midweek Musings, Evie Breitbach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Midweek Musings, or welcome for the first time if you've never listened before. I believe the day this goes out, it's going to be mid to late April already. Let me check. I have my little schedule. Yes, it's going to be mid-April. Oh my god. I cannot wait. Yes, I'm really excited for today's episode. But before we get into it, just a little shout out to follow the Instagram. If you have Instagram, midweek.musings. I would appreciate the follow, because then when I ask you guys questions like, what are your hot takes? Throwback to a couple weeks ago. Then I get more responses. So, okay, well, like I said, I'm really excited for this episode, because if you know me, you know that me and the Titanic go way back, before I even saw the movie. Because you're probably thinking, oh my god, she's just one of those girls that loves the movie Titanic. And you'd be right. You would be very right about that. But ever since fourth grade, I've been enthralled with the Titanic and the sinking of the Titanic and what it would have looked like and what it would have been like. And oh my god, I'm still obsessed. Definitely like it more now that I have seen the movie a couple times. Maybe more than a couple times. So with all that being said, today I want to talk about the Titanic, because we're right around the 112th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic, which happened on April 14th and 15th, 1912. I knew that off the top of my head too. Didn't even need to look it up. And I realize now the number 112 has literally like no bearing on anything, but you know, I was just thinking like, what happened in history in April? The Titanic. I want to discuss the history and the creation and the sailing and the sinking of the Titanic so that we can finally answer the question that 9-year-old Evie would have so badly wanted answers to. Whose fault is it really? I should specify that when I say that, obviously I know that it's the iceberg's fault. Like, if there hadn't been an iceberg, it probably would have been fine. Like, there were so many things that could have not happened or could have happened that would have prevented a lot of the casualties, and it would have really reduced the scale of the tragedy that the Titanic was. Without further ado, let's go.
It's time for a little bit of history.
Actually, it's time for a lot of history, because that's mainly what this episode is about. In the early 1900s, the transatlantic passenger trade was very lucrative and competitive. Lots of ship lines were competing with each other to transport the most rich travelers and the most immigrants across the ocean. White Star Line was one of the big dog ship lines at the time, and in 1907, their biggest competitor, Cunard, announced their planned construction of two huge ships, the Lusitania and the Mauritania. And if you know anything about history, you know those names from some other unfortunate events that happened later on. But looking to answer their rival, the White Star chairman, J. Bruce Ismay, reportedly met with William Puret, who controlled a Belfast shipbuilding firm and constructed most of White Star's vessels. They planned to build a class of large liners that would be known for their comfort instead of their speed, to set them apart from their competitor. It was eventually decided that the three ships would be constructed, called the Olympic, the Titanic, and the Britannic. On March 31st, 1909, construction began on the Titanic. The ship was unprecedentedly large, 883 feet long. And obviously that seems puny now compared to some of these new cruise ships that they're coming out with. Like, have you seen that one, the Icon of the Seas? It's sickeningly big. To the point where I wouldn't even go on it, because it's like going on a small town. It's not even like going on a boat anymore. The Titanic featured numerous amenities that had never been seen before on ships, such as 4 elevators, a swimming pool, ornate decorations. A notable amount of mahogany was used for these decorations. If you know, you know. And even the third class accommodations were better than those of other passenger cruisers at the time. When it comes to safety features, Titanic had 16 watertight compartments in the bottom few decks that would be closed in the event that water started to fill any part of the ship. Their thoughts were that the water would not be able to fill up enough of the boat to sink it. This led builders and the press to believe that the ship was unsinkable. In April 1912, the Titanic underwent its sea trials, and it was deemed seaworthy, which was just in time for its first voyage on April 10th, 1912, from Southampton, England to New York City. It is referred to as the Millionaire's Voyage because first class tickets started at $150, which in today's money would be $4,700. Mind you, this is where they started. And for reference, the Icon of the Seas, which is that big cruise ship I mentioned earlier, with crazy amenities and like stuff you can do, and also like it takes you to islands across the ocean, that costs $1,079 per person, which is obviously still crazy expensive, but oh my god, that's like a fourth of what the Titanic would have cost for a first class ticket. And the first class suites were starting at $130,000, which in today's terms is $5 million. Oh my god. I never knew those numbers until I wrote this, and that's literally insane. Like, I knew it would have been expensive, but I just didn't understand how much. So the voyage itself started out fine. They were sailing with about 1,300 passengers and almost as many crew. In total, there was 2,200 people on board. Throughout much of the voyage, the wireless radio operators Jack Phillip and Harold McBride received warnings about icebergs, which they did pass along to boat leadership. On the evening of April 14th, the Titanic began to approach an area known to have icebergs, and Captain Edward J. Smith slightly altered the ship's course to head farther south, where there would be less icebergs. However, he did maintain the ship's speed of 22 knots. At approximately 9:40 p.m., another ship sent a warning of an ice field in the area. The message was never relayed to the Titanic's bridge. At around 10:55 p.m., a nearby ship, the Californian, sent word that it had stopped after becoming surrounded by ice. Jack Phillips, who was handling passenger messages at the time, scolded the Californian for interrupting him. Two lookouts were stationed in the crow's nest of the Titanic. Their names were Frederick Fleet and Reginald Lee. They were looking for icebergs, but since the water was so calm that night, it made it much harder to see the water breaking around the base of an iceberg. They also did not have their binoculars with them. At 11:40 p.m., an iceberg was sighted and the bridge was notified. First Officer William Murdoch ordered the ship to turn and slow down. They didn't accomplish this in time. They did try, but the starboard side was scraped by the iceberg. Five of the watertight compartments were scraped open, and they began to fill. Now, keep in mind the magical number of watertight compartments that could fill without the boat going down was 4. After some time deliberating, Captain Smith ordered Jack Phillips to send distress signals. One reached the nearby Carpathia at 12:20 a.m. on April 15th. This ship immediately headed towards the Titanic, but they were 58 miles away when they got the signal, and it would take them more than 3 hours to get there. The Californian, who I mentioned earlier, was in the area and possibly closer, but they had turned off their wireless for the night. Lifeboats started launching at this point. Women and children of first-class families went first. We hardly need to talk about this because in every dramatic reenactment of the Titanic, this is where it starts to get intense. They separate the families, and it never goes well. There was clearly not enough lifeboats for everybody. There was just about enough for half the passengers. But since they weren't even loading lifeboats to capacity, they were losing a lot of opportunities there. By 1 in the morning, water was seen at the base of the Grand Staircase, and this was well into the middle of the ship. Like, people knew it was going down. Panic started to ensue. The Titanic's front end, the bow, at this point, began to sink, and the back started to raise out of the water. At 2 in the morning, Captain Smith released his crew for their duties, saying it's every man for himself. He ended up dying on the Titanic, and his body was never found. He's probably still out there somewhere, you guys. I'm kidding. At 2:18 in the morning, the lights finally went out and the ship snapped in half. The front end finally sunk fully, and meanwhile the back end came back down and took several more minutes to fill up with enough water to sink it. The official sink time is said to be 2:20 a.m. on April 15th. Hundreds of people died in the icy water surrounding the wreckage, and about 1,500 died in total, so that was over half of the original 2,200 that were on the ship. Only 705 were eventually rescued by the Carpathia and lifeboats at 3:30 in the morning, an hour after the boat sank. According to Britannica, although the majority of dead were crew members and third-class passengers, many of the era's wealthiest and most prominent family lost members, among them Isidore and Ida Strauss and John Jacob Astor. In the popular mind, the glamour associated with the ship, its maiden voyage, and its notable passengers magnified the tragedy of the sinking. And I'd agree with that. I'm sure many other passenger ships have been sunk over time, but this has just garnered a lot of attention because of the big names that were on the boat, the fact that it was so hyped up before it left, it was deemed unsinkable. The fact that it was its first voyage doesn't help either. So now we've reached the part of the episode where we discuss the different people who are most likely at fault for the sinking of the Titanic, or at least for amplifying the magnitude of its tragedy. This has been debated throughout time because everybody always wants to point fingers. The Titanic situation was even investigated by, like, the U.S. government after it happened. I don't know if they ever actually found who was at fault, but everybody wants to assign blame, and it's tough when you're not really able to. So here's who I've kind of identified as possible candidates. The telegraph operators, the captain, White Star Line, the lookouts, the Californian, and the public. So let's go through it. As I was talking about the actual events of April 14th and 15th, 1912, it sounded like there were some important messages that didn't get passed along, such as the Californian having to come to a full stop because of ice. That seemed like it would have been important, right? But it did say that they did pass along the message about the iceberg sightings. They got several, and they passed them along to boat leadership, right? And I also feel like it's unfair to place the blame on them because they were just doing their jobs. Like, I feel as though there was an underlying problem with this voyage. And I don't think that it's fair to blame these two telegraph operators because they were probably not of wealthy background. They probably were just looking for a job, and so they learned how to be a telegraph operator, and that was like a really good opportunity at the time. It just feels like too easy to blame them, you know what I mean? So then we have the captain, who I also feel is unfair to blame him because he did his best with the information that he was given. He was put in an unimaginable situation where he finds out that there's an iceberg when there's literally not enough time to get out of the way of it. So they turn the boat. To be fair, his one mistake, though, was not slowing down. He could have slowed down. He could have slowed down a lot more. But again, there was not time. So they try to turn, but it's too late. A head-on collision probably would have been worse, arguably. Like, in his mind, it would have been worse. They would have sunk anyway, right? So he did his best. He's not informed ahead of time that there was an area that was so full of ice that the Californian had to come to a complete stop. So he didn't know. Although, if the operators did pass along warnings of icebergs, he had to have known that there was icebergs out there and that he should have probably slowed down. Because, like, for example, when I'm driving my car and it's normal weather conditions, I'm going to go pretty much as fast as the speed limit allows. Gonna really open her up. But if somebody's like, hey, just so you know, it's icy out today, I'm gonna go slower. So that's actually a fair point. I don't know why I say to myself, I don't know why he wouldn't have just slowed down if he was getting multiple notifications about ice. But again, here you have another person who is just doing their job to the best of their ability, right? Because he was specifically selected to captain this boat because the rich people liked him. I'm not even gonna lie, that is why they picked him. He was popular amongst the wealthy people because he had captained other big, like, passenger liners at the time, so they wanted him. So again, here's just another guy who's just doing his job, and it feels disingenuous to put the blame on him, especially since he did go down with the ship. You know, gotta respect that. Because other people would have tried to save themselves. I mean, he even, like, let his crew go at the end. Like, y'all, this is a lost cause. It's out of our hands. I don't know what he thought they were going to do, but I guess if they had time to get to a lifeboat, maybe. Okay. So the next option, White Star Line. Technically, I was going to put the builders as, like, the ones whose fault it was for the... And then I was like, no, because they just built what White Star Line told them to build, right? So White Star Line could be at fault here for creating a ship. I have heard that something with the way that they built it, this ship, with the rivets and the steel created something that was extra puncturable by ice. I don't know how true that is, but what I really want to get on White Star about is telling everyone that the boat was unsinkable. Like, just, oh my god. Creating this vibe of overconfidence and playing God. Oh my god, no. And I mean, let's be real. If they had just never built a boat in the first place, it never would have sunk and nobody would have died. But like, okay, like obviously they were going to build a boat because of the economic climate at the time. It was a really lucrative business to be in. There was lots of immigrants. They were all going to America. There was a lot of rich people also going to America. It's a land of opportunity, baby. So then there was the lookouts. And here we go with another group of people that I feel guilty about blaming because they were just doing their job. Maybe it was their fault that they didn't have their binoculars. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? Somebody could have moved them and then they would have not known where they were. But they also could have just been irresponsible and forgotten them. But also, it does not take binoculars to see an iceberg. I can tell you that, even though I've never actually seen an iceberg. So maybe it does. Maybe I shouldn't say that. They were still seeing icebergs and notifying the bridge. It says, I'm going back through my notes. They were looking for icebergs, but since the water was so calm, it made it much harder to see the water breaking around the base of an iceberg. And then at 11:40, they did see an iceberg and notified the bridge. So it sounds like they did the best with what they could do. The conditions were just so that it created a perfect storm that allowed for this event to happen. But I don't think we can blame them. It also feels too easy to blame them. Like, oh, well, if they had just seen it sooner, how about you get up in that crow's nest and see if you see it sooner? Especially at 11:40 at night, I would be dozing. So then we have the Californian, which is the ship that it was in the area, and they would have probably gotten there sooner than the Carpathia would have if they hadn't had their telegraph line turned off for the night. That's so frustrating to think that they turned it off at night. Because, like, why would the fact that it's nighttime make it any less need for having your telegraph on? Like, that's the only contact you have with the outside world. Especially after they notified people that there was ice in the area. Like, they literally were like, hey, Titanic, just so you know, we had to stop because there's so much ice. And then they're like, okay, peace out. We're turning off our line. Like, that feels like you should leave it on because of the possibility for danger. But it is also not another ship's fault for the Titanic sinking. Some people will say that it's their fault, or like that they should have gotten there sooner. They would have been able to get there sooner and saved these people that died in the water. But it's not their fault. Sure, they should have had their telegraph on. But we also can't know that they would have gotten there sooner than the Carpathia. Because, I mean, especially if they were surrounded by ice, they might not have even been able to traverse that very, very efficiently. It's a lot of speculation, we'll say. And then the last candidate I have for possible blame is the public, and more so the climate at the time of wanting this ship so badly and demanding a ship that was unsinkable and that was utmost comfort. I also feel guilty about, not guilty, I don't actually feel guilty, but I just feel like wrong about placing the blame on the public because they did not directly ask for a ship like this. I think when it comes down to like the actual creation of the ship and who's at fault, it's White Star Line because it was all money driven. And so that's why I feel that overall, all of these factors contributed to the Titanic sinking, and it was a perfect, perfect storm. If one thing had even been a little bit different, they might not have even sunk. Like, if they had just been able to turn it a little bit sooner, if they had seen the iceberg a little bit sooner, if the Californian's thing wasn't off, if the telegraph operator had actually relayed the telegram from the Californian that had warned them about all the ice, if there had been enough boats. I mean, we haven't even talked about that. But all of that to say, I feel that the entity most at fault for the tragedy that was the Titanic was White Star Line. They perpetuated the fact that they thought it was unsinkable, and then they went and charged $130,000 $1912 for a ticket to die. they knew full well that they didn't have enough lifeboats, and they knew that they canceled their lifeboat drill that was supposed to happen on April 14th. They canceled it. I didn't mention that earlier, but they did. And the thing with the rivets, and I mean, the whole idea of having compartments that fill with water, like, here's an idea. Maybe just make it so your boat won't fill with water. Ever thought of that? No. And then also just the idea that they needed to make a boat so big and so unsinkable that they would be the best. It was all driven by this idea that they needed money and they needed to be the best. But that's capitalism for you, baby. That's capitalism. Obviously, we can't actually assign blame. This question has been looked at countless times since the incident happened, but it still continues to boggle my mind. So that's all I have for you today. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. That last bit with the trying to assign blame, I didn't even write anything down. That was just all off the cuff, and I feel that I made good arguments. I hope you come back next week and that this episode didn't completely turn you away from Midweek Musings. Again, if you're not following the Instagram, midweek.musings, head over there and drop a follow. Smash that subscribe button. Hit the notifications for... No, just kidding. Thank you all so much for listening, and I'll see you next week on Midweek Musings.
Midweek Musings airs at 6:30 every Wednesday night on 106.1 FM in the Quad Cities area, but you can also find it on Spotify, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts.